Good evening, folks, and welcome to tonight's City Council meeting. The meeting is called to order. I'll kindly ask our city clerk to please take the roll call.
Chuck Brown, Ralph Dantino, Dorothy Flanagan.
Here.
Sam Hill.
Here.
Craig Maladra.
Here.
Richard Marks.
Here.
Ray Pollock.
Here.
Robert Piper.
Here.
Ron Singer.
Here.
Don Vogelsberg.
Here.
We begin our city council meetings with the Pledge of Allegiance. As always, I would like to invite our nominee this evening, Lucinda Olson, to please lead us in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Amen.
Thank you, Mrs. Olson. Item 3A this evening is to consider the mayor's appointment to the Zoning Board of Appeals. We actually have two vacancies on the commission. Tonight we are hopefully filling one of those vacancies. Earlier this week you should have received an email from me. Attached to that email was a application slash resume from none other than Lucinda Olson. And I would like to entertain a motion to so appoint Mrs. Olson to the ZBA.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Pollack, seconded by Mr. Hill. Questions or comments? Roll call, Mr. Clerk.
Ray Pollack.
Aye.
Robert Piper.
Aye.
Don Singer.
Aye.
Don Vogelsberg.
Aye.
Dorothy Flanagan.
Aye.
Sam Hill.
Aye.
Craig Maladra.
Aye.
Richard Marks.
Aye.
Mrs. Olson. Congratulations. Why don't you come on up and say hello to the gang?
Hello.
I warned you, you're on television.
I know, you told me.
Where's your husband? Why isn't he here watching you?
Just got home from a round of golf.
Oh. Well, good Lord. So welcome.
Thank you
very much for submitting your name, and obviously congratulations on being appointed. Lucinda should not be an unfamiliar face to anybody. She's been around for a while, and perhaps her greatest claim to fame or perhaps dishonor is being Chuck Lencioni's former neighbor. So Chuck left, not Lucinda. So anything you'd like to say?
Well, recently I served on the Bike Ped Committee for 3 years, and I think anyone should want to live in the best community they can live in. So that's why I volunteer to serve.
Wonderful. She's got a heck of a commute. She commutes all the way to Houghton Mifflin every day.
Houghton.
Well, you know. I'm not from Boston, sorry.
That's Dunder Mifflin.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Item 4, amendments to the agenda. Are there any amendments tonight, members of the council? Item 5 is the omnibus agenda. All items marked with an asterisk are considered to be routine unless a member of the council and or community wishes to remove an item.
Mr. Mayor.
Alderman Flanagan.
I'd like to remove item number, make sure I get this right.
11E.
I second that motion.
Correct. I have a different one. We have a motion by Flanagan. Someone played a practical joke on the city attorney and gave him a different agenda.
Oh, he didn't get the revised one.
No, it's all good. Item 11E has been requested to be removed from the omnibus agenda. That's been seconded by Alderman Singer. I believe a voice vote is sufficient. All in favor, say aye.
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 Anyone opposed? Great. We jump down to item... Well, forgive me. I'll entertain the omnibus agenda as so amended. Forgive me.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Hill, seconded by Vogelsberg. Mr. Clerk, please take the roll.
Ray Pollack.
Aye.
Robert Piper.
Aye.
Ron Singer.
Aye.
Don Vogelsberg.
Aye.
Dorothy Flanagan.
Aye.
Sam Hill.
Aye.
Craig Maladra.
Aye.
Richard Marks.
Aye.
Item 10, municipal bills for payment. I kindly ask our city clerk to read the bills to be paid.
Bills for payment total $364,696
$1,000.92.
So moved.
Second.
Motion to pay the bills offered by Alderman Flanagan, seconded by Alderman Singer. Question on the floor? Mr. Clerk, please take the roll.
Ray Pollack?
Aye.
Robert Piper?
Aye.
Ron Singer?
Aye.
Don Vogelsberg?
Aye.
Dorothy Flanagan?
Aye.
Sam Hill?
Aye.
Craig Maladra?
Aye.
Richard Marks?
Aye.
We jump down to items of business. Items of business. Item 11A, consider resolution number 2010-52, authorizing execution of operation and maintenance agreement with Caterpillar Power Generation, LLC.
Move approval.
Second.
Motion by Hill, seconded by Flanagan. Questions or comments for the superintendent and or the director, Buffington / Dinges? Seeing none, hearing none, Mr. Clerk, please take the roll.
Ray Pollack?
Aye.
Robert Piper?
Aye.
Ron Singer?
Aye.
Don Vogelsberg?
Aye.
Dorothy Flanagan?
Aye.
Sam Hill?
Aye.
Craig Maladra?
Aye.
Richard Marks?
Aye.
Mr. Buffington, how long will this presentation take tonight, do you think?
2 or 3 hours.
Ask him what snacks he brought.
How are you feeling tonight, Mr. Buffington?
Those megawatt hours?
That's right. Is that behind the meter? Item 11B, a presentation of the Geneva Generation Facility Analysis Report for calendar year 2009. Again, presentation only, no action taken tonight. Superintendent Buffington, of course, is with us, and he's brought our favorite Badger fan from up north.
Every year we give this presentation, and I present to you Gary Price with the 2009 presentation.
Mr. Price, for the benefit of those watching at home, could you just introduce yourself and perhaps share with the television audience how long you've been working with the city, your background, et cetera? I think that'd be very helpful.
My name is Gary Price. I'm owner of Price Consulting Services, and I've had the privilege of working with the city of Geneva for, I forget, many years. It goes back to the 90s, at least. Before that. You know how to, you know, your memory is the first to go, right? But anyway, it has been a privilege, and fortunately, things. And as they relate to the power supply, has seemed to work out pretty well so far, and I believe they will continue to as well. We have been tasked with each year, as Mike has said, doing an analysis of the GGF. When the GGF was first introduced to the city in the planning stages back in 2004 and 5, maybe even earlier than that. We sent out requests for proposals for power supply. The city's power supply contracts at that time was with Wisconsin Electric out of Milwaukee, and they were very favorable contracts, but unfortunately they came to an end December of 2005. Prior to that, we had sent out requests for proposals for new suppliers, and it was quite a process. It was all in conjunction with the GGF facility being online and complete, hopefully at that time, coincidental with the change of the contract. It was pretty close. I think the contract expired December 31st. The GGF began around June 1st of 2006. But beginning with January 2006, the city entered into a contract with Exelon to provide power to the city to supplement the GGF. And at that time, we had numerous proposals that came to us to evaluate, and the Exelon contract was, among other things, the least cost at the time. One of the alternatives that was considered is what we've identified in the memorandum as a Company B, which we've not identified for confidentiality reasons. I guess that's probably past worrying about at this point. But it was more of an all-requirements contract. So each year we look back to see what if we would have gone with Company B instead of the GGF and Exelon. And alternatively, what if we would have just bought from the market, the PGA Empire market? And how does the GGF stack up against those two alternatives that were available at the time? A lot of things were considered, including the PJM regional RTO ISO and the
that is, that is a heck of a lot of acronyms. So
yeah.
Just if you could, again, just
PJM,
you're speaking to me, you got to dumb it down. So
PJM, everybody knows what that is, right? That's the regional.
Go ahead and assume nobody knows, because we got a lot of folks out, you know, watching from home thinking, who is this Price guy?
PJM operates the transmission grid for a large portion of the Midwest, extending all the way to the East Coast. They also are responsible for a wholesale power market from which the city buys a lot of its power. So that was just getting underway back in those days, and we tried to evaluate the impacts of all of those changes that were occurring, going from an all-requirements contract to owning generation in the city, to new transmission arrangements to deliver power to the city, and then, last but not least, negotiating with ComEdison to get it into the city from the PJM system. As I indicated, the Exelon contract that you're currently served under was the least cost supplier at the time, and also in conjunction with the GGF. And each year we do perform this analysis to just see how it has performed relative to those alternatives that were available. And I believe there was probably a memo of our report that was included in your packet. And up until now, for 2006, 7, and 8, it's been a clear winner each year. The GGF has provided, in conjunction with the Exelon contract, has resulted in substantially savings to the city over the other alternatives that were available. 2009 is a little bit different story. The PJM wholesale supply market, the prices in that market really dropped significantly going into mid-09, actually starting at the end of 08 and moving throughout 09, and they've stayed and remained pretty low. So as a result of that, in doing this analysis, it shows that had you not gone with the Exelon GGF for 2009, you would have saved another probably a couple of $1 million in power supply costs if you would have just bought straight from the market. Now, if we'd have had a crystal ball back in 2005 that says, let's make this a two-year contract, we would have been okay. But you never know. The market is going to swing both ways, and our strategy at the time was to protect it against upward swings, and the market has been known to go through the roof at times. So we wanted to put a strategy in place that would protect the city from extremities in the power supply market, and we think we've done that. However, it doesn't allow you to take advantage of the downswings in the market when it has like it has occurred in the last year or so. So relative to just buying straight out of the market, the GGF was probably the loser, if you will, in that regard. But had we have gone, if we go back to 2005 and look at that all requirements scenario that was available at that time, had we have gone that direction, the GGF, even in 2009, is the much better deal, to the tune again of $3 or $4 million. So over the three-year total, I kind of ignored 2006. It's similar to 2007, but it was a startup year for the generator, and it was a half a year. But looking at calendar year 07, 08, and 09, the cumulative savings of the GGF Exelon deal versus just the direct market purchase is still $5 million savings to the city. And had you gone all requirements, the savings with the GGF is over $6 million, almost 9%. So even though we took a hit in 09, it's still a winner. And I believe for the remainder of this contract, which ends at the end of this year, it will continue to be a winner for this year. Right now, it looks a little iffy, but depending on what the market does by the end of the year, I think it's going to even out for this year, hopefully. So, but I wanted to take just a minute to show you kind of what happened in 2009 with respect to the market. I don't know if you can see that okay. But here, the red line shows what the PJM market energy prices have been starting in January of 07 through May of this year. And you notice they're up pretty high in 07, 08, and then at the end of 08, they begin to really drop. The blue line, at least I think it's blue, is pretty stable. That is the Exelon contract price. It's a fixed price contract, and the prices vary with time of use, summer, winter type pricing, but it's fixed. It doesn't change. So you can see the first part, as we've talked about, the Exelon prices beat the market for the most part. But then starting toward the end of 08 and going into 09, the market dipped and went below the Exelon contract prices. As I said, this contract ends at the end of this year. The blue line is terminating there. The green line at the end shows the prices that have been negotiated for energy, again with Exelon, starting in January 2011. So, and these contracts were signed, I believe, last year, Mike?
Yes.
Okay. So I think you're in good shape, certainly for 2011. I think you probably won't, fingers crossed, see any changes in your electric rates in 2011 with this contract change. So with that, I don't know if you have questions. I'd be happy to try to answer them.
Any comments or questions for Mr. Price? Alderman Flanagan?
Thank you.
Alderman Pollack.
Mr. Price, do you know how long our contract is, the new contract will be for?
I'm sorry.
I was going to kind of throw in the other question, too. Will it butt up against the opening of the coal generation plant?
Okay. Actually, the new contract is not, they're term sheets. And they're different.
I'm sorry?
What we call term sheets in
term
the power
sheets.
Which means that we may buy 15 megawatts of power 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for 6 months. And then we may buy 10 megawatts of power 5 hours a day for 7 days a week. So there's different pieces of it, and they expire at different times, and they have different terms. So cumulatively, these run through 2013.
Okay.
And I believe the Perry State, the expected in-service right now is probably...
It's later, right?
December of 11, yeah. So most of 2011 you'll be purchasing under these contracts with Exelon. And continues through 2013.
But they fluctuate.
The amounts fluctuate and the prices fluctuate. But for 2011, they're pretty fixed there for all months. Whereas you see in the existing contracts, they vary with time.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Alderman Pollack.
Thank you, Mayor. Hello, Mr. Price. Thank you for coming again. I note on your chart from May to November of 2009, there's an inverse relationship between Exelon's cost and the PJM.
Right.
What went on there? What is there anything you can point to that indicated why their price came down?
Well, the PJM market price is what dropped.
Right, but why?
Yeah. Well, lots of things happened starting in 2008. The whole economic system in the country began to become unravel, actually. And nobody was immune to it, including the power markets. The price of gas dropped, and the market prices followed that. Right now, well, at that time, back in 08, beginning of 08, I think the price of gas was $8 to $9.
Right.
That's $8 to $9 per
Per million BTU.
Per million BTU, okay.
Yeah, and today, I think Mike just told me that he's buying for $4, $4 to $4.50, maybe up to $5. Wow. So the market prices tend to follow the price of gas. There are other factors, but gas is a major, has a major influence on it. So whatever drove the price of gas to come down, they discovered more gas, people were using less, et cetera. I mean, there's a whole thing, a whole string of things that could have contributed to that.
Okay, and then are we protected at all, or are we required to run GGF if we note that the PGM prices are falling and it becomes more cost effective to buy on the market than it is to generate our own?
I can answer that.
Okay.
GGF is operated, and we have, what we do is we follow the LPMP prices, and our price of generation.
So, example, the LMP prices, can you just explain that? Because
PGMs.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Marginal price.
Yeah, it's the.
Leading, it's a marginal price is what it is. It's the daily price that's on the market at any one time. And as it fluctuates, and it comes in, and what they do is they price a day-ahead price. So a day ahead, we have a guess of what the price is going to be. And our plant comes in, say, at $56, and the day-ahead price is $60, we'll generate. If the price comes in at $40, we won't generate. So the price indicates whether we generate or not.
Okay, so using the example on the screen, and say July of 2009 when it was, you know, $28, I would assume that our price is constant because of the, or it's not constant because of the cost of gas, but you have your labor, which is, which remains.
Right.
So what would, I mean, how do you, where do we go from there? I mean, are you looking at the daily spot market for LNG?
I'm looking at the hourly spot market.
The hourly
spot market. Day ahead hourly market.
One thing about this curve, it's an average monthly price that we're showing here. This is an average of 24 hours a day for 31 days. So within that time frame, the hourly prices will shoot way up or drop way down. Even they can go negative. How that happens is beyond me, but they can be negative prices. And so he looks at it hourly, and when the price in the market gets to a certain level, he knows what his gas price is. And if he can beat the market price, he will generate. Now, one thing to keep in mind, there are other aspects other than just energy pricing. This generation should be run at the time of PJM's peaks in the summer. There's five peaks that one or five, depending on what your target is, that needs to be run in order to reduce your capacity needs. Here we've just talked about energy, but we need to run the generation to hold down our transmission costs as well. Because if we're running at the time of their transmission peak, however much we're running, we reduce our payment to them for a year based on that occurrence. So there's several aspects to that. That
make so if we have a replay of 2009, you know, a not so terribly hot summer, demand isn't what you would anticipate, you still have the peaks with PJM, what do we do?
What we did last summer, and by the way, ComEd's changed the rules on us, but what we did last summer is we operated 90 hours. We generally operate between 150 and 200 hours. Last summer, we peaked in the ComEd area in June. PJM peaked in August. And so the ComEd changed the rules so that we also have to hit their peak.
So,
And by chance, that's the transmission peak.
So taking a page out of the mayor's playbook, if you don't mind, explain to me, they peaked in June, or excuse me, we peaked in June, they peaked in August. Are we paying for both peaks?
Yes. Okay. By the current rules.
They average.
The old rules weren't that way?
No, we just had to worry about PJM peaks.
Okay.
And typically, though, it's not a matter of...
Mr. Price, if you could just use the microphone, because thank you very much.
It's not a matter of having to run a long hours to hit those peaks. The people who work with Mike in order to dispatch the units for Geneva, they can follow and they can see where PJM's total load is going on a composite basis. And you know, they have historical data plus models they run. They can pretty well guess, if you will, or analytically determine when the highest probability of PJM peaking will occur. So that's when you want to run. And the city has been quite successful in the 3 years of this unit in hitting those peaks. It saves 600,000 to 700,000 a year plus in doing that.
So, Mike, what are you anticipating this year with the different peaks? And
it really depends on the weather. If it's hot, the peaks will coincide.
Right.
If it's cool like last summer, then we have to find the one peak, then find the other peak.
And then now, is there? Okay, so we have two peaks that we have to take into consideration. What does that cost us now that there's another variable into the equation?
I can't answer that in terms of money because of the fluctuation in gas prices, but we're looking at running maybe 20% more during a cool summer than we would.
Than we normally would. Than we
during
normally
the same
would.
Summer.
Right. Just to play by the rules.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Anyone else from the council? Any questions regarding our Twin Peaks energy portfolio? Anyone from the audience at all? Lucinda, you understand all this? You're going to be perfect on the ZBA. Mr. Price, anything else you'd like to share?
No, I just appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Just one clarifying question I have.
Sure.
You referenced from 07 to 09
yep.
an approximate cost avoidance of $5 million.
Right. Let me get to my table.
09 was not a bellwether year
right.
with respect to cost avoidance.
Right.
So the net cost avoidance, is that $5 million minus $2
million? No. Nope.
It is $5 million.
That's already net.
So it would have been $7 million.
Correct.
But, okay, got it.
Yeah.
Okay. Because for my friend Frank here at the paper, that's a good number to publish. Twin Peaks, $5 million saved. You can submit a draft to me if you'd like. Thank you, Mr. Price.
Hey, Kevin, sorry.
Mr. Price makes his... Oh, go ahead. Excuse me, Mr. Pollack.
Just in reference to your question, are we looking at then the all requirements Company B or all requirements direct market purchase for that?
Let me look to make sure. $5 million is the all requirements. $6.2 million is the Company B.
Okay.
Okay.
Now, Mr. Price makes his way back to Wisconsin. You drive back tonight?
Yes, sir.
And when you tune in on Wednesday evening, Hawks, Flyers, who do you cheer for?
Hawks,
oh, come
Flyers.
On. That was an easy question.
Jeez.
Why would you, why would you hesitate?
Is it, which one wears green?
Motion to discontinue use of Price Consultants. Thank you, Gary.
Smile and say cheese.
Again, no action taken. Thank you very much for the presentation. We skip to item 11E, which was removed from the agenda by Alderman Flanagan and seconded by Alderman Singer. Just for, I guess, housekeeping measures, the motion reads, approve resolution number 2010-53, granting conditional site plan approval to include approval of final engineering plans and documentation securing a secondary emergency access with Delanor Hospital designed to the city's standards prior to building permit issuance for nursing home facility, otherwise known as Meadowbrook Manor. It's been removed. I'll turn the floor over to Alderman Flanagan.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. First of all, I'd like to read what I have.
Of course.
If I may.
The floor is yours.
I supported the amendment, if everybody remembers, to require a full secondary access to the Meadowbrook Manor site. Because I felt that this site should meet our traffic standard requirements as well as provide emergency access to the site. I allowed myself to be convinced to vote for the original motion after the amendment failed because I thought this would maybe allow for negotiations to proceed maybe even before the City Council meeting today. And I wasn't quite sure if the settlement, and that the council would review the negative and negotiated settlement before the final approval. So, however, I was wrong. If this resolution passes as it currently is worded, the developer will be allowed to negotiate to a lower standard, and the city will have to live with the results of that negotiation. In reviewing the video of the meeting, I must have pored over this our call meeting last week for I don't know how many days. I've had time to confirm my doubts about the safety of a single right-in, right-out point of public access. Our packets really do not provide a full assessment of the problems we may face with the traffic traveling to and from the site. Mr. Dan Dinges just touched briefly on some of these issues in his statement at the meeting last week. Not only might this traffic configuration result in an increase of accidents, but it may also result in KDOT requiring the city to install traffic medians that would effectively make all points of access along Kesslinger, or possibly not all of Kesslinger, but at least most of it, to be right in, right out, which would maybe deter some of the businesses along Kesslinger, not to mention additional costs to the city if we were to have to put in the median ourselves. I believe that we ought to make access to this site as safe as we can possibly make it. If that requires us to step in, which the mayor had so graciously wanted to do, and help mediate full secondary access between Meadowbrook and Delnor, then that's what we should do. I think the nursing home facility in itself is a good use of the site. It's zoned for that use and would benefit both not only Delnor, but the community, Meadowbrook Manor, along with the rest of the community. I just don't think we should compromise our standards to build it. Instead, we should focus on bringing Delnor and Meadowbrook together to help make this facility as safe as we can, which I don't think the right-in, right-out in itself or in emergency access could do so. So I will vote against this resolution in hopes that we can accomplish this goal somewhere along the line, but I can't vote on the development the way it stands right at this point in time. Thank you.
Thank you, Alderman.
Thank you.
This motion's on the floor, excuse me, this item is on the floor without a motion. Is there anyone else who wishes to speak to the matter? And we're kind of waiving the rules, if you will, but.
Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Singer.
This issue is one in which Alderman Flagg and I have discussed at great length, and she's totally responsible for her direction that she has taken, which I am totally in agreement with. So I'm just attesting to what she has said, and I will also vote in opposition to this issue. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Anyone else? From the petitioner, or would the council prefer to hear from staff first?
Either or.
I'll entertain a motion as written on item 11E.
So moved.
Motion by Pawlak, seconded by Hill. Director Runch. And then I'd like to recognize Mr. Lannert, spokesman for the petitioner.
Staff has been through considerable discussion on this project, and from our meeting last time, we discussed at some length the possibilities for access to the site. We discussed access to the north as a secondary access, access to the east as a secondary access. Both of these would be dependent upon reaching an agreement with Delnor. A third access option for secondary access involved Kesslinger Road, another access point along Kesslinger in addition to the right-in, right-out that's shown on the plan. What we've learned from since the last Committee of the Whole discussion on this was that there had been some dialogue between the applicant and Delnor, and agreement has not been reached between the applicant and Delnor. It's also our knowledge that KDOT has suggested that if the city, in fact, wants to pursue a secondary access on Kesslinger, that KDOT will, in effect, entertain a variation request from the city requesting that access point on Kesslinger. What this gets into, I think, is, you know, the devil is in the details, and this situation speaks to that loud and clear. The access points to the north and to the east that have been discussed for this secondary access, they would have to be unfettered access by our code. Unfettered meaning paved surface, curbing, just like any other access point into a development that would tie into either the access drive to the north or the access drive to the east of the property, both of those on Delmar property. We can certainly sign those two options if they were to be established as emergency access locations. The fact is, they've got to look and smell and taste like a paved surface that's maintained, that's plowed, that's a regular access.
Good Lord. True or false, though, Mr. Runch, if our current ordinance does not allow for a grass-scape emergency access, and grass-scape meaning bricks, if you will, that grass grows in between, and if this council chooses to amend our own ordinance to allow for a grass-scape that allows for unfettered access, we have the authority to do exactly that.
Oh, that standard could always be changed by the city council.
And, of course, we would require any petitioner to ensure through codicils or what have you that would be maintained just like a normal access route.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
I just want to make certain we don't walk away thinking that this council doesn't have authority to also be flexible, because we do with respect to the grasscrete.
You know, certainly there's a staff perspective here on all of this, but the council has the ultimate authority.
Okay.
What I'm conveying to you is really more reflective of our current requirements and current practices.
Understood.
That may in fact be amended or changed by this council. But the point I wanted to make is that these potential access points, either to the north or to the east, that would involve Delmar property, that those access points would pretty much look like a conventional access by what we are now requiring of these kinds of access points. And it gets into the maintenance, it gets into the snow removal, it gets into problems with gates and movable bollards in terms of the practicality of addressing an emergency situation. My final thought, and I'll be quiet. The option of going out to Kesslinger Road with a secondary access has some particular issues at the KDOT level. They were involved in the King County Division of Transportation. They're certainly willing to consider a variation to their standard with respect to creating that additional access point, because they have spacing requirements that they adhere to very closely. And I'm sure the council can recall numerous instances where we've brought developments before where access spacing has been an issue. They will consider, that is the Transportation Committee of the county, will consider a variation request submitted to them for this second access. But that is from a staff perspective at KDOT, it's tied directly to their standards for secondary access points. And what they don't want to see is they don't want to see an access point that's, quote, unquote, an emergency access that ends up becoming a regular access that's working to compromise the right in, right out that's proposed, just in this case, just to the west of the site. So that's where we stand. Regarding the traffic impacts, and you know, certainly the applicant's consultant is here and can speak to traffic impacts. What we see on a project like this from a staff perspective with right-in, right-out dependence on Kesslinger Road, there is going to be a flow of traffic in and out of the property. For those folks, for example, that are coming to the site from the intersection of Randall and Kesslinger, they enter the site, they visit their loved ones, they want to get back to Kesslinger and Randall. By the design that's proposed, it would require them to take a right turn out onto Kesslinger and find some other means of getting back to the intersection of Randall and Kesslinger. So that's going to be a U-turn, perhaps. Perhaps it's going to be a movement up Fisher Drive and up to Williamsburg and over to Randall and then back south down Randall to Kesslinger. Or maybe it's a route through the hospital property itself. And there are ways that you can drive through their parking facilities and drives to get back around.
Or perhaps it would be a route that many of us have discovered, that is heading westbound on Kesslinger, left on Peck.
Oh, yeah.
South on Viking Drive.
Yeah, you could do that, too.
East on Fabian, you avoid all that nonsense on Randall.
And
I do quite a bit, by the way.
And so we certainly, from a staff perspective, we recognize that this design is going to generate that kind of movement or those options in terms of movements.
Is it fair to say, Mr. Unch, that every or at least most developments that we've approved at this council have resulted in creative traffic patterns primarily based solely on the motorist's intent to get to where he or she wants to go?
Well, you're always dealing with human nature on these kinds of things. Right. I think there tends to be, the creative wanderings of people moving on and off properties. I'm always amazed at what people will do. In this particular case, what we're really asking for is either a solution involving Delnor or a solution involving Kesslinger, and certainly the county has advanced an idea of how that solution might be addressed.
Okay.
And from a staff point of view, we're recommending approval conditioned upon this one issue being resolved before a building permit is issued for the site.
Alderman Vogelsberg, Alderman Marks, Alderman Flanagan.
Thank you, Mayor.
And Piper.
Dick, I just wanted to ask a little bit more about the possible full access grant that could be granted by KDOT, because they don't usually, like you said, they have strict stacking or spacing requirements. So are you saying it would be an emergency only?
Correct.
So, okay, so that would be completely separate from the regular.
At this point, understand we've got the same situation over at KDOT. There's a staff that supports
right.
the Transportation Committee. So the staff is going to provide a recommendation to the Transportation Committee if we, in fact, advance this variation request. So staff's going to have a recommendation, and then the Transportation Committee will make the ultimate decision. It's our understanding, and we spoke with one of the folks on the staff at KDOT, that in their staff-level view, a secondary emergency access is grasscrete. It's some kind of movable bollard. It's a locked gate. It's there to provide a surface for the movement of vehicles in an emergency situation. But it's not going to look like a regular paved surface, or it's not going to look like an access point that would be just, you'd have free movement back and forth, because there's going to be a gate. There's going to be some way to stop that. Because in this case, if that secondary emergency access is added to the site plan for Kesslinger, and if you had free flow, unencumbered flow of traffic, even if it were signed emergency and what have you, access, the fact is everyone would see the right in, right out, and then they'd see the unfettered access to the east, and they'd say, well, gosh, I'm just going to go there and get my out. And we suspect that we think it's highly unlikely that the Transportation Committee would approve that arrangement. I don't want to prejudge the situation, because maybe getting corrective minds in a room, if this matter were to go to that level and to where this would be pursued, maybe there's a fresh idea. But right now, what we understand and what we know, we think there would be some issues with that access being gated having a free flow of traffic, and that in effect the county would require some kind of gate or measure to keep daily traffic from using it.
So that's always defies my logic that the emergency exit would be gated. But so that leaves the other access still the same problem with the looping and the – so this just would give us the full access. So really, to make this project work, it would really be great to get that Delnor Drive access.
Well, from a staff
just
point of view,
from
a plan
yes.
commission perspective, that's where the plan commission
right.
staff are coming from.
Okay, thank you. I agree with that, too. Thank you.
Before I recognize Alderman Marks, true or false, Mr. The right-in, right-out access currently proposed and for all practical purposes approved on Kesslinger can also be enhanced through additional modifications of the pork chop. So to prevent the crazies from wanting to make a U-E, we can actually extend that pork chop so that they're not making that U-E.
Well, there are certainly...
There's opportunities to enhance.
Yeah, there are design techniques that can be applied that I want to...
Good enough. I don't want anyone walking out of the room or anyone watching on TV thinking, in my humble opinion, that we haven't thought through all this. And I think your words should echo throughout the community, that if collective minds get into a room, the likelihood of fresh ideas percolating are probably far greater.
There's certainly potential for that.
Okay. Alderman Marks.
Mr. Ons, two questions. I guess if we change the rules for that access, emergency access, that it doesn't have to be paved, is that going to apply just to that, or does it apply throughout the whole city?
Well, certainly it's more of a staff response, and I think from a staff perspective, it should be applied uniform, and we should have a set of standards that apply uniform across the board. But let me add something that I think is very important. This is a standard that that we've currently got in place that's driven by experience of your fire department. And situations that have come up in the past where access has been compromised to a property for a variety of reasons. And, having a gate across an emergency access poses its own potential issues. In the case of the grass creek type of thing, there are some maintenance and appearance aspects to that sometimes can be negative. And there's the issue of snow removal, because typically these surfaces are not maintained. And that's not to say that you can't make arrangements for that, but I'm just saying that there are some operational characteristics of temporary fire access points that sometimes can be a problem. And you've probably been to school sites and other institutional facilities where you can see the hand of government at work when you'll see a large paved driveway going to nowhere along one side of a school. Well, the reason why you see that drive there is for just this purpose, for emergency access. But these facilities do require maintenance, and you need to be able to get through the area. The grass creek sometimes can pose problems with just holding the weight of an emergency vehicle. And so there are a number of details that we get into.
You know, my other question is if KDOT does require some type of median along Kesslinger, who's going to be responsible for paying for that? Is it going to be the city? Is it going to be KDOT?
I doubt that it would be the city's involvement in that cost. This is... there certainly needs to be a determination as to who pays. My own feeling would be is that would be an applicant cost or an applicant, project. And then there's the issue of the impact to, in this
businesses.
Case, to businesses to the south, and how long is that median or that probe, that physical barrier to illegal movements in and out of a right-in, right-out. So, there are aspects to this that are unknowns at this point.
I mean, there seems like so many unknowns right now. I mean, is there any way to just table this to lock them all in the room, or is that what's been happening and we're just not getting anywhere?
Well, there have been conversations, and the applicants here, you can speak to that. Perhaps that it's better that they represent what they have experienced.
I'm glad Alderman Marks referenced that, because my position, Alderman Flanagan and I have spoken about this, my position is, you're right, the one piece that is not clear is this piece.
Yes, it is.
But by this city, in my humble opinion, by this city council tabling the matter, we have to table it to a date certain. And by tabling it to a date certain, I believe we put inordinate amount of pressure on both the petitioner certainly the city, the county, and, of course, the third party, our friends at Delnor, to, quote, find a solution.
Well, that's what I'm wondering, if that's what we need to do.
But by moving this forward tonight in its current form, we allow ample time to negotiate with whomever wants to be involved, and nothing can be achieved until secondary access is secured because a building permit won't be issued.
Will not be issued, right.
I think by passing it tonight, we actually provide greater leverage. And let's face it, we also send out a clarion call to our friends at Delnor that this community has established a goal and objective for this kind of housing. This is important to not only our residents, but residents throughout the Tri-Cities. Yes, there is a value that should be ascribed to a secondary access. Delnor has been a good corporate citizen since 1986 on Randall Road.
I'm not arguing that.
We encourage them to remain a good corporate citizen and sit down with myself, Alderman Flanagan, Alderman Singer, Meadowbrook, and anyone else and say, how do we make this work? And if it can't work, it can't work. Building permit's not issued, and the developer goes away. Because we had this experience back in 2003, mm-hmm. and the developer went away.
Okay.
So that's my opinion. So
I just wanted to talk. I didn't understand that it was a date certain. So, okay. Fine.
Alderman Mark still has the floor.
No, I'm fine right now.
Alderman Flanagan, Piper, then Pollack.
I just have to ask Mr. Unch a couple of questions. If we're talking about a median and the cost of it, should we not be including it into the motion that we're making today, or part of the agreement that we have?
No, I wouldn't assume that a median
would be necessary.
Be necessary at this point. I think we're getting into a level of...
It's only based upon warrants or accident rates. Is that how I understand?
I don't want to speak for KDOT staff, but they're going to look at, they might look at an accident record if they are to occur, or they may track illegal maneuvers if people are trying to compromise the design here of this. I think we are, it gets into a little bit of the level
of
detail.
I'm not a traffic study person by any means, but I'm thinking that I know that everybody is assuming that people are going to be coming just from Randall Road. But I'm sure that there's going to be a lot of people coming. I mean, I don't know how many. I can't purport to be a traffic study person either.
Right.
From the west, but there's going to be a lot of development out west. So what's to say that when somebody's traveling down Kesslinger Road, how are they going to get into that facility? Are there going to be signage then to them to tell them to go around and to get into the opposite direction? I mean,
any situation you confront where you, as a motorist, where you confront a right-in, right-out restriction that doesn't allow you to make a move, then you're going to the next driveway or the next access road. You're figuring out a way to turn around to get back to use
happen. Which I think compromises the Delnor property entrance area, you know, because I'm familiar with that area. You know, you go this way.
And there, part of what's at issue here is the anticipated volume of traffic.
Yeah, they say 75% of trips.
Yeah, the peak hour and all of that.
But we have to keep in mind, forgive me for playing judge on this, but the maximum trip volume is rated at 25.
Right.
So to say 75% of the maximum sometimes becomes a little deceiving.
Right.
Now, granted, there might be, some folks might take issue at the numbers, but 25 trips, I mean, there are 10 times as many trips, heck, 20 times as many trips at the average elementary school every day for 180 days of the year.
And, we have to look at the magnitude of this.
The reason why I'm kind of taken aback by Delnor, thinking that this site is going to generate so much traffic and cause such an impact onto their, what's the road, Delnor Hospital Drive, you know, that it doesn't make any sense to me. So, and when I was talking about the 75, I was talking just basically based from the consultants or the information we had in the packet regarding the traffic impact. And they say 75% of the trips generated will go to Randall Road, so I just want to make sure that it be clarified what I was talking about. So I'm sorry. I just wanted to...
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. The one point I wanted to make regarding the minutia of the design and the radiuses and how this porch hop is designed, KDOT staff is going to dictate the design here. And the applicants are going to have to go through a process with the KDOT staff to arrive at a design that's acceptable to KDOT.
So this isn't the final one here.
They will be all over this. Applicants can prove me otherwise here, state otherwise, but I do believe that the KDOT will be well aware of the potential issues here and would be coming up with a design that that will work to minimize illegal maneuvers mm-hmm. just by its design.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Will this be the one that's proposed in the picture that we received last week? It looks like they have a gate. Is it not a gate that's there? I'm sorry, the access point on Del Nora Hospital Drive.
There's no gate.
There's no gate. It was just a paved with grass footage
point.
Or whatever. I don't know how you explain that.
Yeah, I don't believe there's
okay.
a gate.
And there was no other areas that the applicant or Del Nora discussed other than this access point and the ones between the two existing buildings to the east. There was nothing regarding the ones in the back portion of their lot, right? There is a road. There's a road in.
It's the same.
Yeah, but you know, there's an area right here that I don't know. I mean, I'm not attuned to laying out development.
There's no gate.
Okay. Thank you.
Anything else, Alderman Flanagan?
Not for now. Thank you.
Piper, Pollack, and then Maladra.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, because I'm looking at this with this right in, right out. That is really the the main and only way in and out, correct?
The only way. Yes.
Okay. 128. You know, and I've had issues with this, obviously, you know, since it started. That said, I don't want to hold this up by any stretch of the imagination, only because as I look at this from kind of a big picture perspective, and I kind of take a look at what St. Charles did with the mall, I don't want to shoot the project in the foot. I think there are things that we can do. I think we still hold the trump card. Nobody's getting a building permit until this thing sorts itself out. I think that Del Nor has been a good corporate citizen over the years. I think they can. I think they've done a real nice job over the years. I think they should take a real hard look at the things that we've done for them over the years, and take a real look back at maybe thinking that they may have to come in here and ask for something else over the next few years, and before they start digging their heels in too deep. I'm not a developer by any stretch of the imagination, and you guys are. Can you negotiate onto Del Nor Drive? Yeah, you can. You're going to have to negotiate with checkbook, mm-hmm. but you're going to have to buy your way in. Do I think that can happen? Yeah, I think it probably can. But I don't, and I can't speak for everybody else. I'll tell you right now, I'm not one that would be for changing any sort of an ordinance into bricks with grass growing through it. I just think that's going to – I think that's going to cause more problems for people than it solves. We're in a real bad spot. We don't own any of these roads. It's our ordinance, and we're just in a bad spot with these roads, guys. I'm sorry. Do I think the project's good? Absolutely, I think it's good. I think it would be good for everybody. I think this can be worked out. I really do. I think if we moved it forward, it can be worked out. I don't like the right in, right out any more than you guys like it. I don't think you guys like it. I remember the last time we discussed this and you were asked, do you have any other projects that have that? The answer was no. I think it can be worked out. I think my confidence is in the mayor and in getting some more people in the room, getting Del Nor around the table. It may cost a few more dollars to do. It may cost a little more arm twisting to do, but I think it can be done. I think we can move forward and be good for everybody. But I don't see it that there's a lot more we can do, and I don't think we gain anything by saying no to it. If Mayor's right, we did this in 2003. Everybody wants to take their toys and go home. Well, then everybody's done everything they possibly could. But I think by shutting this down today, from our standpoint, I think it might be a bad plan. I think we see this thing through and see if we can see it through to the end. I think we're this close. We're almost there, and I'd like to see it move forward. Thank you.
Alderman Pollack.
Thank you, Mayor. I mean, there's no doubt about it that the ingress egress is not an ideal situation. Delanoy Hospital Drive, is that a city road or is that a private road?
It's a private road built to city standards.
Okay.
So it could handle 25 cars.
Yeah.
Is that said on the record?
The problem is that you're absolutely landlocked. And I don't buy, you know, we're going to sit down with Delanoy and we're going to hammer out a deal. It's not going to happen. If it was going to happen, it would have already happened. The only hammer you have with Delanoy is to talk about eminent domain. And anybody want to talk about that? I don't. Well, I think we're stuck. I really do. I really don't know what the solution is here. So that's it.
Alderman Maladra.
Okay, so I agree with Alderman Piper. We're close. It seems that one thing that we're very afraid of is that by voting this down tonight, that kills the whole project, and I don't think we want to kill the whole project at all. At the same time, I think that, well, I at least am uncomfortable continuing the process talking only about an emergency secondary access. I think that Alderman Flanagan's point about anybody coming from the northwest or southwest is going to have to do some sort of weird curly Q motion to try and get into this property. The only way you can get into the property is by traveling west on Kesslinger from Randall Road. That makes absolutely no sense to me whatsoever. We are talking about only 25 cars, so I think talking to Delanoy about access to Delanoy Hospital Drive for emergency purposes only is not doing anybody any good. I think we need to talk to them about full access. And then my only other thing is the only voice that we haven't heard in the last 2 weeks is Delanoy. They have been good partners up to this point since 1986. We've worked with them together. We've done a lot for them. They've done a lot for the community. I got to believe they see this type of use as being important to the community. I'm extremely puzzled what their issue is as far as this access. And so if we were to table until a date certain, could we request that they attend a meeting and talk to us about it? I know we can't compel them, but they have been good partners to date.
Sure.
An invitation.
I doubt the council wants to give me subpoena authority.
No, I don't. I know they can't be compelled.
I'll defer to the city attorney on that one.
I'm just curious as to what their position is. Maybe you know.
Well, long story short, I have met with the CEO and the project facilities manager, and as I described briefly earlier, their position is, I think, has and probably will forever remain that they ascribe a certain value to a secondary access, and that value is X. That value may seem extraordinarily high to the Meadowbrook Manor folks. I'm also under the impression that that number is kind of been a moving target. So,
okay. So forgetting that one, what I'm uncomfortable with at the moment is that we're going to say go off and negotiate emergency secondary access. I don't think that that's sufficient. I'm also a little bit wary of the creativity that we talked about. I think people can get into a room and negotiate something that's pretty creative that winds up being kind of kooky. So is it possible that any solution be brought back to the council for approval?
These are dumb ideas.
No, certainly.
Tell me they're stupid ideas.
Oh, no, I'll wait till the camera's off. No, I think... No.
Chime in.
Absolutely. Absolutely it can be. Personally, I think your position is right on. I think what most people will walk away from tonight by just viewing this meeting is, where is the other voice? What is the real position? You know, my conversations with a leader of a company are private. But certainly, anyone who wants to stand before the podium and explain their position in public, more power to them. So. Alderman Singer, and then I'd like to invite the petitioner via Mr. Lannert to introduce himself and speak to us as well.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Dick, is this project being done in more than one phase?
At this point, what's proposed by the applicant is a two-phase project.
And all phases will be being constructed at one particular time?
Not all at one time. Two different times.
You're going to have one phase, and then you're going to go to a second phase in some near future.
There's really no specific schedule that we've heard from the applicant, but the idea is there would be a first phase project, and it's identified here, and then you can see up on the drawing the second phase. It's added on the back of the building at a later time after the phase is built.
Has the traffic consultant taken into account the additional traffic flow with the second phase being constructed? So that's all part of this issue right here, and it's clarified as such. All right, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
You're welcome. If there's no objection, I'd like to introduce or reintroduce Mr. Lannert, who represents in part our friends from Meadowbrook Manor. Mr. Lannert, welcome back.
I'm glad to be back. I guess the devil is in the detail, but this really is a good project, and the only thing that we're really arguing about is those details. And I guess depending on where you sit around the table, those are either insurmountable details or not insurmountable details. I don't think they're insurmountable details. I think that when we're talking about hard surfaces versus grasscrete, we're talking about ordinances that the county and Geneva have control over. When we're talking about unfettered access or not unfettered access, those are, again, choices that people have made as it relates to their ordinances. The situation that we find ourselves in tonight in terms of Meadowbrook is we're trying to get this very needed project, a nursing home for this community and our neighboring communities, into this community. It has a huge economic benefit. It has a huge fees involved in it, from building permits, from connection, you know, fees. All of those things are very good. It does create jobs. We think there is a strong business relationship, which we have discussed many times with Delnor, in terms of relationship between doctors, which will work both at the nursing home, as well as nursing staffs that will work in both places, as well as the patients, you know, using the facilities of the doctor's offices right next door. So there's lots of strong business relationships that we think will be a natural outgrowth of this. At one point in time, we thought we were on the same page with Delnor relating to that reciprocity and being able to do those types of things. Ultimately, we were unable, as a private party in terms of the Meadowbrook property in Delnor, as a private entity, we were unable to make a business decision, or we were unable to reach a business arrangement between these two private parties. And that agreement is necessitated because there are no cross-access easements ever provided for any of Delnor's property as it has been developed over the time between this landlocked piece of property and all of their improvements. Most recently, next to your substation, there's a aisle that, you know, goes off, and Meadowbrook would connect to any portion of the Delnor property at any location that they would permit it. Back when I first spoke of this with Craig Livermore was willing to consider. No official action had been taken. It was prior to the time that you know, he has retired. They would consider a grasscrete connection from this parking lot to Delnor Drive. You, Geneva, were unwilling to do that at that time. We had that deal. That deal came and went because of your ordinances. Now we are at an impasse as it relates to the connections with Delnor. In many cases, as we've talked with Delnor, they have not waived their first choice in terms of a non-asphalt paved access point. So this community, as it relates to having us continue to interact with Del Norte, we're probably going to have an issue with what paving surface we ultimately use. The request tonight, and as part of what we were talking about before, is that if, in fact, these two private individuals cannot come to an agreement, we are asking you, Geneva, to participate with us in the county. And we don't have a contingency. We have a guarantee. The county has given us a letter that says, if you, Geneva, request this additional access point, which is what your staff requires, out onto Kesslinger Road, based upon the city's request, they will work with you and grant that to you. So therefore, there is no contingency. We have a write-in, write-out, which is all we can get from the county based upon their criterion. And their criterion has obviously changed as Mill Creek has developed to the west, as traffic on Kesslinger has, additionally increased, as the businesses south of us, have developed. All of those things have changed their requirements. So we're in a different context, we're in a time warp, as it relates to what we could have done or should have done a couple of years ago. Right now, we're stuck with where we are. The county has agreed to give us right-in, right-out access, and it is safe, and it is efficient, and it allows people to get in and get out of this site. It does allow fire equipment and ambulance equipment coming from the west to the east to get in and get out. All of those safety features have been designed into this and will continue to be designed into this as we move from this stage into construction document stage. Getting back to the emergency access point, the KDOT, will grant us that upon your request. Dick is correct in terms of his explanation that they also, the county, want to have that be some kind of a grasscrete paver because they, the county, in my conversations with many of the county transportation department heads as well as individual staff members, the reason they want it to not be hard surface unfettered is because when it's in their right-of-way, they don't want to have to maintain it. We have offered, Meadowbrook Manor has offered, that if, in fact, maintenance is the issue, regardless of the paving surface, Meadowbrook Manor can solve the maintenance issue if the county's requirement for grasscrete is a maintenance issue, which is what they have identified, to me. Now, getting back to that, it puts it back into your court as it relates to whether or not you have hard surface, unfettered, ungated, uncompromised access points. So at some point in time, we might be back here asking for a waiver of that because someone is going to have to help us out if, in fact, you want this project. You can't say you want this project, but you won't change your ordinance. You can't say you want this project, but you think everyone's going to break the law. You can't say you're for it and then be against the details. You have to be for the project and for the details. These are things that we can work out. People coming to nursing home are not impulse buyers going to get a hot dog or a hamburger. Their loved one is here. They know where it is. They've been here before. They probably don't want to be here visiting mom or dad or grandma or grandpa. So it's a destination orientation. So the confusion is probably not going to develop. The safety issues have been planned into this plan and or any alternates that we can work out from the development standpoint. Your staff can work out with us. The county staff is very able to resolve these, and I call them minor issues, to a very good project. What we can't be, what we would like you not to put us in a position where we can only and singularly negotiate with Del Norte because we have tried that. We have not been successful. As the mayor pointed out, they didn't offer him access either. I was happy that he got the same response that we have gotten over all these times. It's not through lack of trying. I'm hopeful that as we continue to move forward on this project, as we continue to build it and develop it, I think that reasonable people and reasonable solutions usually are found, and it doesn't have to be time specific. So if you will allow us to work forward on this project, we certainly would appreciate it. We would like you to be able to let us take the county up on the offer they've made to us and also to you to permit the access point onto Kesslinger Road, working with their county staff and your county staff, realizing that depending on who maintains it and depending on how it's gated or not gated in terms of the usefulness, we might be back in front of the council for a grasscrete or gated or non-gated access point, depending on what we negotiate with Kane County. But I think we can do that. Again, the county is on letter. There's a letter on file as part of the development where they offer that solution to you. And again, they're offering that solution to you, Geneva. They're not offering that solution to Meadowbrook. But we think that either by executing that agreement, which we have in hand, or by continuing with that agreement in hand to negotiate with Del-Nor, when they are not the principal point of access, they are a preferred point of access, we can be successful and deliver the project to you that we all want. Thanks.
Mr. Leonard, I have one question that I think many might find interesting. When this project was first devised, a certificate of need was required.
Correct.
The certificate of need requires other parties' endorsement of the project.
Yes, that's the Illinois process.
That's the Illinois process. And if you're not familiar with the process, it's kind of old-fashioned, to say the least.
Could we add convoluted to that?
Yeah, convoluted is a good one. I like that. Did Del-Nor Community Hospital provide a letter of support under the certificate of need process?
Yes, they did. They are a supporter based upon that certificate.
So there is a letter on file from Del-Nor Community Hospital supporting this project.
That's correct.
Okay. Just so everyone understands that. Alderman Pawlak, then Flanagan.
Thank you, Mayor. We're just looking at Google Maps, and I was able to pull up Fisher Drive. There's the pond, and then there's the parking lot behind the pond. The land between the parking lot and the pond, it looks like you can extend and build a road, but I don't know what the dimensions or what the topography is. Was that considered?
There is a connection point to the drive to that parking lot, which is at our northwest corner, and we could connect at that juncture also. But again, that is Del-Nor's property once again.
So Del-Nor's property goes from the parking lot all the way to that retention pond?
Correct.
Correct.
We're landlocked.
Yeah, you bet you are. Oh, well, thank you.
Alderman Flanagan.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I don't want to be argumentative, Mr. Leonard, but I do want to point out that our motion does not in any way, shape, or form discuss KDOT at all.
I know. I didn't realize that until I saw
it. It just talks about Del-Nor.
Right.
So
I don't think that we're going to be and my crystal ball has been kind of fuzzy based upon the economy of the time that we find ourselves in. I do not think that we're going to be successful in negotiating with Del-Nor, and so we do really need to have the option of being able to get the emergency access point off of Kessler as a part of the ability to keep this project going.
Thank you.
Well, can I ask a question? Thank you.
Sure, Alderman Vogelsberg.
Okay, I think the one thing that would be good for clarification is what you said about the destination person, because in your remarks you're talking about things have changed. Mill Creek was allowed, but you know, I automatically ruled that out as an argument because Mill Creek, it's not causing any stacking to anything. My fear about this is because it's going to impact an already busy intersection of Kesslinger and Randall. Mm-hmm. And what I'm picturing is Fargo and Randall, which I don't think any of us would ever sign off on that again. But that is probably a million times different with the traffic pattern, because you're saying these are only – it's not going to be that many people.
Yeah, it is the mayor pointed out, as our traffic report says, and we have a traffic expert here if you want him to clarify any of it, it's only 21 cars in the peak hour. And if, in fact, you live west and you're going to see someone in the nursing home, you'll probably turn at Fisher Drive, go north, and either then go into Del-Nor and Del-Nor Drive, because even though it's a private drive, they don't really police it in terms of, the public can drive on their private drive. Mm-hmm. And or if you don't want to go through the campus, you'd go up to Williamsburg and then across and then down to Randall and then back across for the right in, right out on Kessner. As you look at the traffic report, you can also find out that we feel that most of our traffic will be coming north and south on Randall, and so therefore they're going to be turning on to Kessinger, and the right in, right out is not going to be a difficult motion, you know, for them. So it really is not a traffic situation that's going to develop that's going to impact anything. I mean, you know, 21 more visitors to our downtown wouldn't help our tax base. We need a whole lot more cars than that to have any kind of a traffic impact. This is minimal.
Anyone else on the dais? Comments or questions from Mr. Lannert and or his team? From the audience, anyone? If you don't object, I'd like to,
I was just going to make one more comment.
Oh, from the, yes, certainly. Alderman Flanagan?
Yeah, I'm not here to change anybody's minds. I was just, this is when I sat down and listened and reviewed everything, this is what came to my mind. I think we need a full access for this site. If I'm not mistaken, and you can correct me, your facilities have other facilities around the area, and do they not have two access points, or do they just have one right in, one out, right out?
Two access points, but they're not under the jurisdiction of KDOT either.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Findall, would you like to say anything at all?
No.
No? Okay. The gentleman there in the third row is the president of the Homeowners Association in Fisher Farms, so I thought he's been keeping an eye on us. Anyone from the audience, any questions whatsoever? Everyone's clear on the motion as presented? Mr. Hill?
I'm the only one that hasn't said anything.
We were hoping to get away with that, but
I know. I'm closer to the age of somebody who might want to be a resident of this home.
Really?
Yeah. Most of the residents, not all.
But you won't have a
But I'm disappointed in the lack of agreement, the lack of concessions from Del Nor Hospital. I've been glued back together three or four times in that hospital. It's a wonderful hospital, but I don't understand their reluctance to allow a safe exit away from Kesslinger Road for emergency purposes. I just cannot comprehend that. And I think that that's where it has to be, away from Kesslinger Road. I've traveled the Del Nor Road many, many times. Turning left on Kesslinger Road to attempt to survive to get to Randall is tough enough where it's located currently. Another left turn onto Kesslinger Road would be asking another family or individual to take their life at risk. I agree with the right in, right out, but I'm just having great difficulty in understanding why Del Nor Community Hospital has been a good community member, but they're not willing to cooperate on this project and allow an emergency exit going through their property. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Alderman Hill. Anyone else before we ask for the roll call vote? Unless the city attorney corrects me, this is a simple majority. We only have 8 members present tonight. 6 affirmative votes are required. Mr. Lannert.
As Alderman Flanagan pointed out, do you need to amend the motion to allow us to negotiate with KDOT in Geneva, as opposed to the ordinance, as I understand it, requires we only negotiate with Del Nor?
I would entertain a motion that negotiations continue with Del Nor and allow negotiations to also take place with KDOT.
Can the chair do that?
No, I'm just recommending it.
Oh.
I wouldn't offer the motion, but I would just recommend it. I think.
I would make that motion, Mayor.
Alderman Pollack makes the motion to include and negotiate with KDOT.
I'll second that.
Yeah, the motion to amend, excuse me, is offered by Mr. Pollack, seconded by Mr. Singer.
KDOT and Delmar.
Yes.
Right, on the amendment, this is discussion on the amendment. Vogelsberg?
So, okay, say that passes. What are we essentially saying with that motion?
We're simply adding language to the motion. We're amending the motion to include the language that negotiations can also take place and are encouraged to take place with KDOT. So that if on off chance Meadowbrook and Delnor do not reach conclusion, that there's parallel negotiations also with KDOT.
Call the question.
No, that's okay. Alderman Flanagan had your hand up before Mr. Singer.
Well, I'm only going to interject that so we're going to lower our standards by allowing which we're not quite sure if KDOT will give us this access anyway, but a Grass Creek paver, if I'm not mistaken, is that what KDOT would do, or is it would? According to Mr. Runch, he made a comment that it would
Let's see what the county's going to require and whether or not they can strike a deal with Delnor and come back to us.
It's not coming back to us.
But it's not coming back to us. If you're going to amend the motion, can you please amend the motion so it comes back to council?
Sure.
To council.
Sure. Absolutely. I would amend the amendment.
Do you want to just add as a friendly amendment?
Yeah.
Okay. Friendly amendment. Seconded.
So it goes to the county. We see what they want. It goes to Delnor. See what you negotiate with them. And then come back to us, and let's see what it is. And if we don't like it, tough twinks, right?
The record show, tough twinks has been entered in the record.
And I agree with tough twinks.
Mr. Runch, do you want to add some elucidating remarks?
I'm not sure if I can elucidate or not. But the nature of this motion would be, to recount it, to hear a little bit, or restate it, would be approval of the site plan for this project, site plan approval, subject to the applicant submitting documentation securing secondary emergency access via Delnor Hospital property or Kesslinger Road property, a la KDOT. And then at that point, your current motion had designed to city standards. Maybe you choose to eliminate that. But that's in the motion, prior to building permit issuance.
Also with return to council for full review.
Stamp of approval, if you will,
but per Mr. Pollack. But I would also say for the record, that and anyone watching, the onus is on Delnor Hospital to come back to the negotiating table. Because, I mean, let's face it, we've all said obviously kind things about our friends at Delnor, but we're also equally perplexed as to why this hasn't taken on or taken the path that we all would have expected it to take. So,
can I make a comment?
Oh, sure.
I've talked more here tonight than I've talked all year, I think.
And I bet you're going to watch this movie.
No, I'm not going to watch it. Not if I'm going to be talking. No, that's not. Now, what was I going to say? I still want a full access as a secondary access. So if the motion includes emergency access, I will be voting against it. So just so everybody knows where I stand. Thank you.
I'm just trying to eavesdrop on the attorney and city administrator's conversation. Alderman Maladra?
Did she say full access?
Full access.
Yeah, Alderman Flanagan just stipulated that despite the best efforts of the amendments, she'll still vote against because she prefers the full access.
You want a full access that the emergency access does not suit you, correct?
I don't think it's adequate.
I understand.
Alderman Maladra?
I just had a question. So how many cars per day do you guys anticipate at build-out when all your phases are done?
How many destination trips are coming per day?
Our consultant's quickly looking through his report. The number that's been bandied around today is that our peak hour shows only 21.
That's 21 in an hour.
In an hour. That's the peak hour.
You're open 24 hours a day. So
yeah, but I'm sleeping rather than seeing grandma. She'd like you to come more often if that's possible.
I would say that, you know, for me to think about 21 cars going this circuitous route, that's one thing. But to think about 200 cars a day going down this strange little maze, that's a little bit different. So.
It will be more. It'll be less than 21 cars in all the other non-peak hours. But even if it was, you know, 12 times the 20, that's only 240. So even if you just hypothetically look at it, it's nursing homes are not high traffic generators.
Not high, What's that? You don't have a number.
If you want to join us at the podium, yeah, please do. Come on up.
Just for
and if you could, sir, just for our benefit, state your name and your social security number, please. Okay.
Good evening. My name is Javier Milan. I'm a senior consultant with KLOA. And I do not have a daily traffic number like what you were asking for. We have the peak hours. But roughly speaking, you get the majority of the traffic for this facility in the morning because of the employees are coming to work, and in the afternoon because you have the people visiting their loved ones. You know? So if you take those numbers and you add them up, and you can probably make a guesstimate, you know, saying that, you know, that's probably about 60% or maybe 70% of what you're going to see on that day. If you add the rest of the hours of the day, which are going to be much lower than what you're going to see in the PM, I'm going to guesstimate about 80 total trips, you know, and let's say 100 just to go on the upper side. That's what you will see on a daily trip generation. That's throughout the whole day.
Okay, I think your reasoning is sound. That makes sense.
From the dais, anyone else, or from the audience?
Mr. Mayor, if I may.
Mr. Singer.
The traffic consultant, I would assume that the weekends would generate by far a greater deal of traffic than with the regular daily routes. Would you not assume that?
Weekend tends to be about the same as the PM peak hour, and we have looked at the volumes before. And once again, it's not a huge generator. I'm going to say something sad, in my opinion. You know, if you have a loved one there, you would think that you would have more movement of traffic visiting their loved ones in there, but it doesn't generate that much traffic. So on the weekend, it's about the same as what you will see during the PM peak hour. Now, on the weekends, keep in mind, traffic tends to be lower mm-hmm. than during the PM peak hours. So even if it would be a little bit higher, it actually evens out because traffic on the adjacent roads is actually mm-hmm. lower. So the impact would be about the same, if not less.
I see. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
You're welcome. Anyone else on the dais? Are we clear on the motion as amended? Or as offered, excuse me. Alderman Vogelsberg?
I'm sorry. I thought we were going to vote just on the amendment.
We are. We are. Yeah, we are. We're voting. We talked about the amended motion. We're voting on the amendment only with Mr. Pawlak's suggestions that it return to the council for hugs and kisses. If that ever gets back.
Can that amendment be read back to us, sir?
Not without somebody from, you know, who got a 36 on their ACT. But the motion reads, as I'm going to try my best to describe it, approval of resolution number 2010-53, granting conditional site plan approval to include approval of final engineering plans and documentation securing a secondary emergency access with Delnor Community Hospital and or with KDOT to city standards prior to building permit issuance for nursing home facility and all such matters to return to the city council for final approval. That's the amendment. That's the amendment.
Yep. Can the question be called?
With great joy. Just a vote on the amendment, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. Clerk, please take the roll call. Oh, excuse me.
Should we have a second?
Yeah, we do. We have a
Singer.
Singer was the second on the amendment.
Yes, it was.
Ray Pollack?
Aye.
Robert Piper?
Aye.
Ron Singer?
Aye.
Don Vogelsberg?
Nay.
Dorothy Flanagan?
Nay.
Sam Hill?
Aye.
Greg Maladra?
Aye.
Richard Marks?
Aye.
The amendment passes 6-2. We now return to the main motion as amended. Any comments regarding the main motion as amended? From the audience? Again, ladies and gentlemen, 6 affirmative votes are required. Mr. City Clerk, please take the roll call.
Ray Pollack?
Aye.
Robert Piper?
Aye.
Ron Singer?
Nay.
Don Vogelsberg?
Aye.
Dorothy Flanagan?
Nay.
Sam Hill?
Aye.
Greg Maladra?
Aye.
Richard Marks?
Aye.
The main motion as amended passes 6 affirmative votes, 2 nay votes. Ladies and gentlemen of Meadowbrook, ladies and gentlemen of Delanor, ladies and gentlemen of the world, you have your work cut out for you. So thank you for your patience and your participation.
Thank you.
Okay, now we're on to discuss the 2017 budget because we've been here for 2 hours.
Well, at least we have our goals.
That's true. That's
well, good. Not this half of the room. Because she didn't.
Folks, we are down to item 13, new business. Believe it or not.
Or the amendment.
From the audience. Anyone in the audience tonight with any new business at all for the benefit of the council and or the millions of people watching instead of watching The Bachelorette?
I agree with what you had to say.
Local guy on that?
I'm sorry.
Except for Ellen. Yeah, there's a local guy on that. It's very disturbing. I'll probably get letters about that now, too. Ellen DeVita, come on up. Well, yeah, I know that, but I wanted to give the audience an opportunity. That was Ellen DeVita, our former economic development director, who was just talking. Zach, anything? Lucinda? Anyone new? Any new faces?
I mean,
nothing at all? Yes, please. Welcome. Come on up. Thanks for sitting through all that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, very interesting. My name is Rebecca Colburn, and I am part owner of Preservation Bread and Wine, soon to be opening on 3rd Street next week.
Very exciting.
Very exciting. So I just wanted to come and...
You brought wine?
I didn't.
Oh.
No samples.
I didn't know it was that kind of meeting.
No samples.
Well, Rebecca, tell us a little bit about your store, because I had the pleasure of visiting with you and your husband while it was under construction, and I know it still is.
Mm-hmm.
But you have some great stories from when you used to hang out in Chicago and do all this.
My husband and I moved out here from the city a few months ago. He was the beverage and wine director at a restaurant in Chicago, and I have a background in baking, so we married our efforts and have created Preservation Bread and Wine. And our business is sort of focused on bread being the base. I bake all of it. We have sandwiches and soups and salads and that sort of thing. And then the front of the house, because he's more outgoing and has a better personality, is my husband. And he does all the wine and...
Schmoozing,
if you will, keeping everyone happy. He is hard at work with the finishing touches. We have gotten our health inspection went through today.
Excellent.
So we're just inches away from being able to open, and we're very excited. So we just wanted to come and tell you a little bit about who we are and invite you to come on down.
Well, welcome.
You're in a beautifully historic building.
Yes.
There's a great history behind the building. And, in fact, they also received not only from the Health Department of Kane County a blessing, but also a secondary access to the site. These people want to run, so it's like awesome.
And a drive-thru.
And a drive-thru.
Wow.
We are at – it's going to be next week. We're not totally sure. I think the 17th. We're planning – we're also going to have a cheese counter, like an eat-in cheese counter, so you can come and get – a platter of meat and cheese and that sort of thing. So we're going to have a nice event on the 19th with our cheese distributor, like a cheese and wine tasting.
How late will you be open?
On the weekends till midnight.
How about during the week?
Ten.
Till 10.
On Mondays.
Mondays.
Now the meeting's just set short.
Mondays, we're not going to be open.
Oh, my God.
Oh,
but
man.
We've
we
got a
menu's
ordinance.
Do you see how we suffered?
You might want to be. You might want to be.
We will. We're going to have some catering, too, so.
Excellent. You really want to be open on Monday nights.
What's your address again, Rebecca?
513 South 3rd. So it's okay. The right beside Colonel Fabian's and the Spice House. Where right in there.
Perfect.
And
nice.
Oh, yeah. We will have a little back patio open, too, with four tables. So
neat.
You can sit outside and enjoy your wine or beer or spirit.
We would on Mondays.
Well, we'll see what we can do. Right.
That's very, very exciting.
Yeah, it is.
If you haven't had a chance to peek in the windows, it's extraordinarily beautiful inside the building, too.
You will not recognize it from what used to be the Chef James.
Uh-huh.
We took everything out. It's tin. It's the original tin ceilings and exposed brick. And
cool.
So it's very beautiful.
They've been doing the work without a permit, which is really cool.
Well, we're all about liquor in this town.
No, I am.
Right.
Watch my
words.
Sample.
Yeah. So come down and see us.
We will.
Definitely.
Next week.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bon appetit.
Fifth one.
Anyone else in the audience? Anyone else opening a wine shop or anything?
Sure beats a liquor.
Who's the gentleman in the back? See one of the hockey players who hasn't shaven yet for the...
Hi.
I do have an important announcement, and I want to make certain that everyone is well aware of this. There should be a copy of this in everyone's mailbox, and there should be a copy going to all homeowners in the affected area. You may or may not have heard, but our friend Bruce Heidloff, the owner of the Millray Cyclery, has been working with a number of people to put on a event here in Geneva, tentatively scheduled for July 10th, It is an international cycling classic, and it will involve, if it is a go, will bring cyclists and fans from all over the world. The International Cycling Classic is scheduled to be the fourth largest grand tour in the world. It is scheduled, again, for Saturday, July 10th from roughly 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. There's no cost to the city. The race should generate between 500 to 700 racers. Throughout the course of the day, there will be 7 races with 5 to 10 breaks before each race begins. The race course will, if approved, impact parts of Third Street and some of the local side streets. An informational meeting has been scheduled for this Thursday evening, June 10th, at 6 p.m. at St. Mark's Church, located on 4th Street. The City of Geneva representatives will be present. I will certainly be in attendance. I'm certain representatives from our police department, our public works, and others will be in attendance as well. It's worth noting that Mr. Heidloff and the police and our downtown crew, Mr. Evans and Ms. DeVita and others, met with Bruce today as well. We not only recommended but strongly encouraged that before anything is even considered by this city council, that we meet with the residents first. The biggest inconvenience, no question about it, will be, during the race, vehicle traffic will be restricted, and some parking may be challenging. So please, if you're interested in this at all, June 10th, this Thursday evening, if our friend Frank can publish this in the often read but seldom understood Geneva Republican, that'd be heaven. So good stuff. Anything else, Ms. DeVita?
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for asking. I was done with saying all that. I appreciate that. That's great. And, Ellen, this has been distributed to everyone's mailbox as well?
No.
Oh, well, I guess we'll be doing that tonight, won't we? At the podium is Paul Evans. For those of you watching at home. The red line is the proposed map. There is a... three-wheel race, so Alderman Hill, you'll be interested in that.
Good.
Well, that doesn't look inconvenient at all.
You wearing bike shorts, Kevin?
No. Kind of like the traffic pattern for Meadowbrook.
Oh, we came up with a collection, so he wouldn't.
Paul, can you say what streets those are?
Where was the laser pointer here? This is it.
Yeah, it's really
The mayor's got it.
Okay.
Okay, Paul, what's this right here?
So that's that is Campbell.
Campbell Street.
Oh, Campbell.
And then this is down 3rd Street, turning at Fulton, and then going down 5th Street to South Street, and then up 6th Street.
Oh, okay.
1 mile track.
About 0.08, but yeah. And so the difference, this is called a criterium, where they do laps, and the professional race they'll have at the end will do about, 75 laps, and other races do around 30, 35 laps, something like that, around the course itself. So the other races are like what they call a road race, and that's just over land, but you don't do the laps, you know, so a number of, but obviously they is like it, Geneva as a place.
I'm sure what's the incentive for the racers to be part of the program?
This is cash awards, a professional race. They win prize money.
There's $100,000 in prize money being offered. It's a sanctioned event by the U.S. Cycling Federation, and anyone who wins gets free wine and cheese at Rebecca's.
How many affected homeowners?
The proposal, and again, I have not met with the event coordinators myself, so I'm looking forward to Thursday night, but as I understand it, you're looking at dozens and, for all practical purposes, perhaps thousands, because all traffic will be prohibited in this area, as you have cyclists coming down without brakes going about 40 miles an hour down our side streets. So it's kind of like Piper on his motorcycle.
Nothing new.
Yeah, but
it's
he's
nothing
just
new.
One.
It's like Fargo Boulevard.
That's right.
Down at 6th and James.
Yeah, so it's really critical for anyone who's either interested or lives in the affected area to attend the meeting. Nothing has been granted to this event planner, Mr. Heideloff, and or his team. In fact, this is probably the most important meeting to attend is this Thursday evening. So
that's a Saturday.
It's a Saturday, July 10th.
It's a Saturday.
In the downtown, we'll be locked
up. So there you go. Did I forget anything, Ellen?
Yeah.
Come on up, Ms. DeVito.
Hello, everyone. I will say that we've been talking to them for 5 or 6 weeks, and we've expressed a lot of skepticism, and every time we come back, they keep coming with how they've got an answer, because they've run these races for several years. There's 17 days in a row that they're going to do these. They would have someone stationed at every intersection. They've got a couple hundred barricades where things are closed off. They use a cone system if someone wants to get out of their driveway and they live on, or they live in the interior and they need to cross. And they have, like you said, 40 walkie-talkies. They're bringing in a professional staff to run it. Paul and Commander Passarelli and Sergeant Frieders have been meeting with them for several weeks. And it's up to the community, though. If the community feels it's going to be a great opposition, we've told them we want to hear what the community has to say. We've asked them to send a letter to everyone that's in the affected area, and we've asked them to go door to door so that it's not a surprise to anybody.
The city of Arlington Heights hosts a criterium. The city of Wheaton, I think, used to host a criterium.
Elgin used to.
Yeah, Elgin, certainly. Mm-hmm. That's right.
This is the group that was in Elgin. The Elgin race was a 5.9-mile race. This is a smaller course. And the morning races, there's a couple 20 laps and a couple 30 laps, and then the big one is the professionals at night. And that's what I've learned. I mean, Paul might know a few more details if you have questions. So.
And these are the guys who have, like, well, Craig, you'll know this, baseball cards in their spokes, so it makes that cool noise. It's like,
yeah. They run it with a pace car. If someone gets too far behind, they pull them out of the race so that they keep them in a flight going at the same time. So that's what we learned. I've never seen one of these races. Has anyone else?
Sure.
Have you, right? Yeah. Have you been in one?
No.
How about you, Sam? There's a triathlon, huh? Yeah. Okay.
Tour de Geneva?
Tour de Geneva.
Okay.
Okay, that's it. Anyone from the dais? New business at all? I would just like to send out a shout out to Brown that it's time to take your pill. So there. He dared me to say that, and I just did. If there's nothing else, entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Hill, seconded by Piper. All in favor say aye.
Aye.